podcast is brought to you today by SafeMap International. Hey, on June 29th in Atlanta, Georgia, SafeMap is presenting Safety on the Edge North America, featuring Corey Pitzer and Todd Conklin. It'll be held in the Embassy Suites Hotel at Centennial Olympic Park, right in downtown Atlanta, very nearby the ASSE meeting. And it's an entire day of workshops. Welcome to today's pre-accident podcast. I'm Todd Conklin, your host. Thanks for listening. Holy cow, it's good to have you with me. What do I got to tell you today? Well, you know, the months are zooming by. We love that part of the year, don't we? Uh-huh. Maybe. What the heck? You turn around and it's gone and you're like, but I didn't get to enjoy it like I should have. Yeah, bring it back. Which is why I think the whole notion of going slow, enjoying, taking time to smell the roses or coffee-flavored roses or roses-flavored coffee, anything you want to smell, just knock yourself out. Who am I to judge? It's worth it. And I think the time we spend together on this podcast, it's fun for me. I hope you enjoy it as well. Today's podcast is super interesting. Today's podcast, we're really going to dig into sort of the power of learning, but we're going to get there through an interesting discussion about the power of lean and how lean and new safety kind of fit together, which is a really bold thing to say, but I think you're going to like it. Bob Edwards did an interview, a cute little interview. It's a great interview, actually, with a couple guys in a company called Superior Industries. It's actually Paul and Dave Schmidgall. No, Schmidgall. I think I said it right. Now, they put a lot of pressure on me to not say it wrong, but I feel like I got it. Schmidgall. There it is. And they're going to just talk to us really about how they think about their company and how they think about their role in creating an organization that learns from itself, and how they get there is really super sweet. It's interesting. You're going to love this podcast. I'm not going to talk much about it. Let's talk a little bit on the backside of this podcast. Thanks for listening. The numbers are tremendous. Actually, the impact we're having is really quite remarkable, and you're a huge part of that. That makes me feel good. It makes me feel good when I get an email that says somebody from somewhere who's really out there fighting the good fight and feels like they're alone and pushing back on managers that want to, by golly, hold workers accountable. By golly, I got the, if I lose accountability, I lose control. It's really encouraging to get an email that says, you know, listening to the podcast or listening to the interview with Charlie Madison or whoever they listen to, that really helped me sort of relight the fire underneath the motivation that I have, and that's pretty cool. And so, without much further ado, will you sit back and enjoy the Superior Industries podcast on learning and lean? I think you're going to love it, with Paul and Dave Schmidgall. I think I got it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Paul Schmidgall, and I head up our safety and quality areas of the company. And when I say company, we're actually a composite of three different companies. One that does fabricated steel products for conveyor systems and components. We built Westmore. Our Westmore division is petroleum tanks, things that haul propane and refined fuels. And then the Hancock division, which is precast concrete pipe. So I get to get involved a little bit with a lot of all different of them, places. Yeah.
And it's, I can tell you from an engineering point of view, it's fun to work with you guys because you make cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I like the different sites that you have, and it's very different products from these different companies. Dave, what do you do?
So background, started at Superior, I think it was 1998, and worked in their IT department. And so, and we're going to talk about this, I'm sure, as part of our conversation, but learning is a key part of IT. There's so much change. So our passion is really about is growing people, getting people excited about learning. And my focus is on the Hancock team. So I help with the concrete pipe division.
Very cool. And you guys are spread out across several different states, right? Where all are you guys located?
Yeah, actually, we manufacture in 26 locations, primarily the upper Midwest, but we do have two locations in Canada, and as of last year, a place in Brazil. Right. So, yeah, really geographically spread out.
I think the last time I was here, there was like a foot of snow on the ground and wind blowing about 40 miles an hour. And, yeah, from being from Tennessee, that's a little tough on us. Yeah, so it's good to be here with you guys. So a couple of things that I would really like for you to share with folks that listen to these podcasts. One of them is how you guys have embraced this notion of 5S in your shops. I mean, I've been to a bunch of your shops. It's even kind of cool because your different shops will say, well, how do we compare to the one in Morris, right? I mean, everybody wants to know because they seem to be really valuing this notion of keeping things in good order. So how did you get there? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's been, I would say, a multi-year, several-year journey. Really starting with, you start with one area, create what you want it to look like, and everybody says, you know, yeah, we're really excited about that, or at least you try to get a leadership perspective that they're excited about it. And then as it develops, I would say your average person working in an environment likes the idea that their workplace is organized, it's brighter, it's cleaner, they can find the things they want, they're not tripping over things that are cluttering the floor. And then as it continues, one work area leads to a second work area, which leads to another division or another plant adopting that. And it really, we have a leadership team. Our CEO has been known to visit a location and you know, possibly have some things to say about, hey, this could be more orderly. We need to clean this up. Right. You know, we need to get more organized. Yeah. Let's spend some time on this. So.
So you value it as a leadership team, and you've stressed it with your guys in the shop floor. I'm guessing you had to provide some guidance around this, but also provide some time so that they can keep the shop, get it in order, and then keep it in order, right?
Really, yeah. And the 5S system only works if you create a sustaining system to it. So it needs to be set in order at the end of every day. So it should look every morning when you come back like it did the morning before.
Right.
And then have a system where you get some outside folks to, you know, walk through an area and help you see things you don't see when you work in that area.
Yeah, because it may be kind of normal for you that thing always sits against the wall, but somebody else says, yeah, that's
exactly.
Not good.
Yeah.
And so for there may be some folks, there probably are some folks that listening to this that don't even know when we say 5S, what do we actually mean by that? Where does that come from? Where do you guys get your information on this notion of 5S?
Yeah, So it's a lean principle, so out of lean manufacturing, and the 5S is five words that begin with S. That the interesting part of that is they're translated out of Japanese, so I've noticed, you know, several variations of what S words actually get used, but the idea is that, you know, you would start out by a sort, basically go through a work area, take out the things that don't belong there. You'd come back, you would shine that area, so you clean it all up, brighten it. You would set an order, which is the step where you, you know, on a tool board, get
like
things
shadow
organized,
boxes,
yeah, get it labeled. And then standardize, which means that, you know, you have common colors, you know, common labeling structure, you know, a common look and feel that would people can identify with visuals, things a lot easier. And then the last piece is the sustaining, where you're able to...
Which is a tough one. If you're like my garage at the house, sustain is my hardest thing. I can get it all in order, right, and it can look good and be organized, and then 6 months later.
Yep.
So you've had to build in, I'm guessing, something on a routine basis that says, we value this, and we're giving you the time each day. I saw it when I was out there yesterday. They were finishing up their work, and as part of that, they were tidying everything up, setting it back in order, cleaning it back up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe David could speak to that on the little closer to the front lines on the concrete plant side.
Sure.
Very challenging environment. It's precast pipe. We got refuse concrete. You know, a lot of things going on. It's seasonal. It's really busy in the peak of the season.
And we're a good example, too, because we were acquired in 2011. And so we kind of had the pre-Superior culture of Hancock, and then the Superior culture kind of kicked in. And Superior has three pillars: customer wow, innovation, stewardship. And I think this really ties into stewardship. And stewardship is really everything that we have in our jobs, we technically don't own. We're entrusted to take care of it. And so any piece of equipment, any asset we have, any building, our goal is ultimately to show that stewardship that the worst shape it should ever be in is the day that it shows up. Right? So even something brand new should actually, under our care, be in better shape 20 years from now if we're maintaining it. And so that wasn't Hancock's culture. And I think you can also apply stewardship to the individual. And I hope we'll talk at some point about that's where the growth of the individual comes in. It's like the company is obligated also to provide an environment of learning so the employee is in better shape a year from now in their mind, in their body. But Hancock's culture, when we were acquired, and this is a true story, we went and took some pictures of our yard, and there was an oven, a person's like office chair, I think there was like a washing machine.
Like
or
a cooking oven, like an
cooking
appliance?
Because,
you know, I'm from the appliance world. Was it a GE?
I don't think it was GE. No,
okay.
I won't say who it was.
GE ones don't belong out in the field.
Yeah, I won't say
somebody
it.
Else's, that's
I think
fine.
It started with a W, but I'm
oh,
not sure.
Oh, okay, nice.
So, and so we showed the pictures to our president, and he said, "Where is this a picture of?" And we said, "It's actually a picture of our yard." Well, why would people throw their junk on there? And one of the guys that was helping us at the time said, "Well, if it looks like a junkyard, people are going to leave their junk." And so, you know, we really started at the very beginning of being about as far as you could be from Superior's 5S. And so we just kind of worked at it, and we have six plants in the Hancock division, and not every plant today is up to that standard. But every plant is better today than it was in 2011. And it's just this repeating mindset with people. It's even throwing away stuff that we've held on to.
Right.
It's like that's people get emotionally tied to stuff.
Well,
say,
yeah.
It's okay to throw it away, right?
And us maintenance guys in the world of the maintenance world, which I've spent part of my career in, it's hard for us because I might need something off of that, and so we kind of stack stuff up in the corner.
Yeah. And I think you have to win people over.
Yeah.
I mean, conversation by conversation, day by day. It's not you cannot just have a slide deck, present it, and then be done, or have them come and look at components or equipment and go, "Here's the standard, now go do it." I mean, you really have to walk people through it.
Right. And you show that you value it. What I found interesting about you guys, because I've had the privilege of spending some time with you guys, is the way that I see you change things is because you show you value it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so powerful to me, and that you've really helped me a lot with that. If I want to make a change in my organization, I have to show the people that are working with me or for me, or even that I work for, that I value this.
Mm-hmm.
And so 5S is something that many companies work on and work at. I can just tell you guys do what I would consider pretty hardcore manufacturing. I mean, cutting steel and welding things together and grinding things, and your shops are some of the best I've ever seen. And I don't say that just because I'm sitting here with you guys. I say that to other people. I've told Todd about you guys. And what I think is also cool, you already started to touch on this, is you're always learning.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn from the Lean thing. What makes sense here? You don't just say carte blanche, everything that Lean says, we will go do. No, you look at it and you say, does it make sense in my organization?
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready for that? If we are, let's apply it. If it doesn't make sense, so that's pretty smart.
Yeah, and that's definitely challenged us over the years, because the easiest thing would be to find a book you could read or a consultant you could hire that comes in and just says, you know, here's the script, this is what you do, and, you know, life gets good after that.
Right.
In the real world, you have to make it your own. You have to take and understand the principles, the drivers, and then when you understand it well enough to teach it, you're able then at that point to really get people to buy into it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a few minutes about, because I've been pretty impressed with how, I mean, just all through your organization, I tend to run into people that are actually interested in learning. And you actually sent me was it an email or something? We had, because I think I shared that on my LinkedIn. Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing as you guys value learning. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing in your organization?
Well, I think the first thing we're seeing is when we hire people and they make that choice to come and try us out, right? I mean, it's a choice people make to work at an employer. We recognize people come from varying ages, backgrounds, abilities. And in this day and age, a lot of people have lost the joy of learning. I think it's something like over 30% of adults will never read a book after high school.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
14% of the U.S. population can't read. And you know, I could ask a question like this. What would you say if your child, who is in school, read two books a year? What would be your...
Yeah, that wouldn't be acceptable, right?
It wouldn't be exciting, would it?
No, uh-uh.
Now, if I ask the question, how many adults read two books a year?
Well, I mean, I think some of my kids in elementary school, they actually get like bonus points for every book they read. So, of course, one of my sons will pick the thinnest book he can to get credit for it.
Yep.
But still, they motivate them through rewards to read a dozen books every 6 months or whatever.
Right. Right. So there's something behind of when we hire people and get them a part of our culture, we want to grow them too. It's growing people towards greater stewardship. So it's helping them rediscover this joy of learning, which our mind is a muscle that you can reignite and reengage and get back into that joy of learning new things. What I really appreciate about what you've been teaching us is some of the richest ways to learn is when you fail, and how we react to failure is really important. But at the same time, some people are coming in and they're looking and they're saying, I haven't read a book in how many years? I haven't listened to a podcast. I'm not really doing anything to kind of feed my mind.
Other than like watching TV or whatever,
right?
Which that doesn't really...
Right.
That actually pulls intelligence out of your brain.
Yeah, that's right. It sort of drains your brain. Yeah.
And everybody needs, you know, those hobbies and those entertaining times. So what we try to do is say, okay, how do we get people back engaged? And to lead anyone, you have to have self-mastery, you know, self-leadership. And you can have miraculous results with very simple changes in behavior. So think about flossing or brushing your teeth. It doesn't take that long. A couple of minutes in the morning, a couple of minutes in the evening.
Always after eating chicken.
And you can compare that then to somebody who doesn't. You won't see the results right away, but the condition of the teeth 20 years from now will appear miraculous, but it's really not. It's just a simple habit. So we look for ways that we can start teaching people habits, like rediscovering things like reading, listening to podcasts, Superior University, where we actually have our own internal classes that we repeat and we teach, and people can sign up for them, and I can take those classes. And let me put it like this way. If you think about it, if a person reads 15 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day for 260 days, it's just weekdays. We're not even going to count weekends to get the weekends off. At the average reading speed, that's going to come to be about 65 hours at the end of the year. That'll be about 1 million words.
Wow.
So take a team of 10 people that commit to that simple daily habit. Now they have 10 million words that are new ideas from other companies, guys like Todd Conklin, Decker, others. You can bring that knowledge in. So now not only are we learning on our floor, we're also learning from other people.
Right.
And so we really see that as part of what we're trying to incorporate with our... can we become a campus? So instead of just saying, you know what, our kids are graduating, they're not reading books, they don't care about learning, you know, what about this next generation? Why don't we step in and say, let's provide that opportunity where we're as attractive a choice as going to college. So that when you come and work for us, 10 years of working with us, we're going to grow together.
Yeah.
That, to me, is exciting. That's what we're passionate about.
I think you told me a story about one of your employees that actually said, you know, I haven't read a book in X number of years, and he was excited about.
Yep. Yeah. I'll tell you two parts of that story. So when I first told you that story, that was a younger guy, and he has a commute every day. And so I said, hey, have you ever done audiobooks? So he starts getting a couple audiobooks, and I think he finished 30 or 40 audiobooks last year.
Oh, my goodness.
It went from zero
to
40. He said, this was a life changer. Okay, then on top of that, he now has a small team he's leading, and guess what he's doing with his team? They've read through 2 or 3 books. And on top of that, we were at an industry association, and we were teaching about HOP. And he was in the classroom, and he actually shared a little bit about how he started to read through audiobooks. One of her plant managers was there. He went home, talked with his daughter and wife. They helped get him set up to get audiobooks, and he's now listening to audiobooks.
Nice.
That's what's exciting.
So that also tells me kind of how old that plant manager was, because he had to get his teenage daughter to help him with the technology. Yep. That's okay. We can lean on those teenagers. Yep. They are useful. They
absolutely. Can help us. That's absolutely.
Right. I don't know how to do audiobooks. I'll ask my 6-year-old or my teenager. They'll help me figure it out. Yep. Yeah. How about that? So that actually, it's people influencing people and inspiring them to learn as they. As an individual, which also helps you collectively as a corporation.
Yeah,
it's definitely a contagious thing. You know, if you're around a group of people that are excited about new ideas, new ways of doing things, they want to, you know, try something, something different, you know, it definitely catches on, and you get people that get motivated to say, hey, I want to be a part of the learning, I want to be a part of the new thing.
Right.
And, you know, like, you know, Dave has said, it's a joy of learning, and to get people connected with that. Something else that's relevant, I think, to our the culture, which if we go back in years, you know, we're in a small town, we're in a somewhat remote part of the state. So our roots are really from an area where we've had a lot of people that have came maybe with a high school background. You know, we've got some really neat stories. One gentleman, for whatever reason, only had an 8th grade education and took it upon himself to learn AutoCAD by reading the AutoCAD manual, which is...
Oh, my word.
You know, I talk about power of concentration, and I can't imagine that being a joy of learning, but he did it. He taught himself AutoCAD, and from there he got an interest in working on a computer, and he became a network manager working with our company. We first did our very first computer network, evolved into doing our initial ERP implementation, and today is a support person on our company ERP system.
Wow.
And, you know, one of the best IT people that we've had. In fact, when Dave came in 99, they worked together back in those days on the IT side. But so I think, you know, that's one example of somebody that just, you know, knew how to learn and had the motivation to learn and then was able to accomplish some really neat things. And I think when you're culture is that, it supports that, it promotes that, and you start learning from each other and challenging each other.
Right.
It grows on itself.
What was the term you used earlier today about something about conflict? Or
yeah, we use the term healthy conflict, and it's really the idea that the best ideas come from sometimes debate, and the fact that if you're in a setting and what you really want is the best idea to win. So it's not about ego. It's not about somebody winning the debate. It's the fact that you can challenge each other and, you know, sometimes bring the best idea out of that discussion. Micah Zellwinger, who's our CEO today, and I used to joke, and we actually would do this. We'd have a passionate discussion about something, and then we'd stop and we'd say, okay, let's trade sides. I want to argue for the other side for a while. And we do that, and in the end, usually arrive at, no, this is what we need to do. We feel like we've, you know, we've heard each other, we've heard both sides of something. But to draw that out of people, maybe a lot of people have came from an environment, you know, if they came from another company where any kind of conflict or
right,
any kind of...
Right, was seen as bad. Yeah, you're not a team player.
Exactly. If you push back, you know, it's definitely not rewarded. And you know, we hope to actually have the opposite. It has to be done in a healthy way. It has to be done without ego, you know, with an element of humility. But when you are able to present your ideas in that way, you know, we do get a lot of, you know, we get a lot of great, I'd say it's group learning at that point. It's really, if you think learning teams, you know, there's a good element of you create some conflict, not like you're, you know, stirring it to be a debate, but you're creating some conflict because you've had a bad thing that's happened and people are coming with, you know, they've got their own point of view when they come, and you just give them a point to, you know, to just talk it out. And at the end of it, you're gonna take ideas from that.
Right.
I
learn.
Think that's actually another thing that we do. Again, we learn together. So a lot of times in our families, in the school setting or in the public setting, we don't typically know how to do candor or honesty, and yet there's something very precious about the truth. Even today we've been talking about how to ask the right questions, like humble inquiry, and how to engage people to ask right questions. But sometimes we have to ask questions that get into an area that are, it's a little uncomfortable. A simple example I can think of is we had an employee who had body odor. And it went on for a number of months, and when I finally caught on to it, I said, Who sat down and talked to him? Well, nobody has yet. But more than one person knows. Well,
everybody knows.
Right. Yeah. So in a way, healthy conflict also is getting into this, also speaking the truth. You know, speaking the truth in love. And when you really care about people, you'll say something like, "Hey, Bob, can I talk to you? Notice a couple days where, you know, there's a little bit of a smell. I'm wondering if I can help you with that." Or, you know, "Hey, there's a booger in your nose." So you don't have to embarrass people in front of everyone. But you can even take them aside and tell them that. So I think I have personally learned a lot through that. And I've talked to quite a few other people, too, where we then bring that to our homes. And we start trying to model that with our kids, too, where it's this loving honesty. And also, the conflict comes in that the healthy conflict is passion. So people who have ownership are also passionate. So think of any good book you've read or any movie. What makes it interesting?
Yeah.
Conflict. And so why do we have conflict in some of our meetings? Because we care.
Yeah,
we believe in what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But we also have enough trust with each other where Paul can say, "Dave, I disagree with you on this."
Yeah.
We don't take that personal because we know in the end we both care about this company.
Right.
We care about each other.
You have
disagree on this specific. Yeah.
But you have a common, I think actually Todd talked about this on one of the other podcasts about this whole idea of sort of common ground. The common ground here, mm-hmm. the common sheet of music here that we're all trying to sing to is we want to be successful as a company, mm-hmm. as an organization with our product, right?
Yep.
And you have to have, I mean, that whole notion of a differing professional opinion. Without it being a program for you guys, you guys actually do that. You're okay with somebody not agreeing with you because they may actually have a point there that you hadn't thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep.
So what are the results of this? So you guys have been doing this for a while, and you continue to do it. Mm-hmm. And now you're learning stuff about learning teams and human performance stuff. You just continue to build your organization. What are you seeing of the value of all of this learning approach to life is bringing you as a company and organization?
Oh, I would pick one value as engaged and satisfied employees. Where one of the gentlemen that was at our training the first 2 days of this week was from New Brunswick. He had never been to our corporate companies before, and he got tours. And then in sitting through the training, the comment that he made to me is he said it was just so neat to see that this was really real.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You do what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell he was just very, very excited to be a part of something that, you know, maybe a lot of companies would have an ideology, but he's like, "You guys are really for real in this."
Yeah, and that's what I've told Todd about you guys, is that you actually do this stuff. You're not just talking about it, you actually do this stuff. So you don't have a metric on learning? Don't you need a metric in order to get people to learn? I'm confused. How is this possible?
Yeah, that's a great question, but actually, no.
We like to measure still. Yeah, that's the problem. We like to measure.
Yeah, we do like to measure, but there are some things like this that if you put a measurement on learning, you would totally kill the very thing that you're inspiring.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, sorry, I can't help myself when it comes to metrics. I am super opinionated about the damaging effects of so many of our metrics. So good job. Really, really good work that you guys are doing. I definitely think in the future we should get together again and talk some more. So just as you guys learn more stuff, share this stuff with me. I'll get it to Todd. We'll get it out there for people. Because I think, and the reason I kind of started this with the 5S is because you learned about 5S and you valued it, and it has become important to your organization, which segued really nicely into this whole conversation we just had about the value of learning, the importance of learning. And the fact that you guys value that. I'm excited about where you guys are and where you're headed. And like I said, at some point in the future, we should definitely sit down again and tell me the newest stuff that you're learning and stuff. And I'm just looking at your bookshelf over here, Paul, and it's like, this is, you know, it's cool to look over here and you see books like Plain Talk and a book on Abraham Lincoln. Oh my goodness, there's the pre-accident investigation. Where'd that book come from?
There's actually about four of those
up there. Yeah.
There you go.
Leading with questions. I mean, it's cool to see. This is the kind of stuff that excites you guys about learning about how to make your organization better.
That's interesting you point out the bookshelf with books, too. Study in England that was done recently, and for every 50 kids' books that they found, there was a 5th percentile improvement score in the kids' education. And so what they started looking for was 2 or more bookshelves in the home. Hmm. And what that showed, again, was the habit of parents who valued reading.
Right.
And then, in turn, read aloud to their kids. And academically, for every 1 year of school, it was two additional years of information that they were testing at.
Interesting.
So there, I mean, there is something
there's some
to this.
There's some correlation and causation, if you will, between this thirst for learning.
But back to your point on measuring, we've also had it where people just check the box and say, I've read 20 books, but I've applied nothing books I've read. So it's...
Because if you were measuring me on how many bookshelves I have, I'll go put some more in real quick. So now I've got a good
score. That will not work.
Good. Well, so thank you guys. Really, thank you a bunch for taking some time to talk with me. Your message is good. It's needed. It will help. There will be people who will listen to this. There will be hundreds of people that listen to this and will maybe get a little more inspired to learn. You know, Todd says it in the podcast all the time, learn something new every day. Mm-hmm. You guys have that in practice. You're doing that with your organization. Good things are happening from it.
Yeah, we really appreciate your part of that. You've definitely inspired us in some of these areas. The organizational learning, learning team approach. It's been, you know, we're new in the journey, but definitely got some exciting things coming along with it.
What'd you think? Big thanks to Paul and Dave. Nice work. And Bob Edwards, thank you so much for doing that. He's kind of like the little field reporter that's out there zooming around. It really does help me. It kind of doubles up my chance to get content. And let me open this up. If you want to do an interview, I'm wide open to it as well. Anything that we think's interesting, we want to listen to. And anything that's as valuable as this one, those guys, I can't thank them enough for sort of talking to us about the way they think about managing their company and the way they think about creating their culture and the value they have in the ability to learn. I don't know if it struck you, the statistics they gave. I didn't fact check them. I don't think I need to. The fact that most adults don't read is something that I run into a lot, and it scares me just because there's so many really interesting things in the world to read. There's great books and amazing things. Call me anytime. I've got some book that I'm always really super interested in, and I'll share my reading list anytime you want to hear it. That's for sure. The value of learning, I think, is the value of constantly improving. And that notion that learning and improving are coupled is probably not a strong enough message, and we need to make sure that we build that message. You've heard me say it a million times, that when events happen, whatever kind of event it is, operational, environmental, safety, quality, when an event happens, the organization has a deliberate choice to either blame and punish or learn and improve. And what's so valuable is that they're opposite. And that if you choose to blame and punish, you get the emotional satisfaction, but you miss the learning. If you choose the learning, you get improvement, but you don't get a chance to punish. Either way, that's something to think about for sure. Thank you for your time today, and thank you guys for the podcast. It was great, super great. Until then, learn something new every single day. I bet you did today. Have as much fun as you can possibly squeeze into a 13-pound burlap bag. And for goodness sakes, be safe. You sound like $1 million.
$1,005,000, right?